I was typing up these questions yesterday, and I was like, I hope they don't think these questions are too scary. But I want you to be comfortable in thinking, okay? I want you to get comfortable thinking. So I don't want to just have a question like, oh, like, how do you feel better about reading the Bible now or whatever? I want you to take what I gave you, and I want you to try to theologize about it. Okay, so question number one, follow with me. Theology is defined as, quote, the study of God. Many schools and universities will teach different kinds of theology. For instance, Catholic theology, Muslim theology, Jewish theology, etc. Based on the definition, theology is the study of God. Do you think there can really be multiple forms of theology? And I give you a little hint to guide your reasoning. I want you to think back to what I said at the beginning of the talk about knowing God, how we come to know God, and the nature of divine revelation, okay? And this is going to help inform you in your reasoning to an answer, right? And I tried, when I made these questions, I tried to make questions that you could very well get on the street, right? Like, someone could bring this up to you. Like, so what about multiple different forms of theology? What about multiple religions, okay? Question number two. And the whole first two-thirds of it is me giving you something. It's not the question, okay? So in Dei Verbum, the Second Vatican Council's document on divine revelation, the Council of Fathers wrote that in Jesus, quote, the full revelation of the Supreme God is brought to completion. In other words, God revealed himself through the events of the Old Testament, but at the most fruitful time in history, he chose to reveal himself by himself, by coming down from heaven in the historical person of Jesus of Nazareth. Hence, everything we can know about God, we know through Jesus, precisely because Jesus is God incarnate. I just gave you the first part of my talk in like four sentences, right? So here comes the question. That being said, how would you respond to someone who says they do not believe Jesus is God? Does Jesus adequately prove his divinity by his words and actions recorded in the New Testament? And if Jesus' divinity is not attested, is not proved by his words and his actions in the New Testament, what are the ramifications for divine revelation? Okay? So in this question, I'm just getting at the fact that we've said that Jesus tells us about God because he is God. But what about when you encounter somebody who says, well, I don't believe Jesus is God? Uh-oh, what do you do then? So I'll let you guys figure that out amongst yourselves, okay? And then we'll talk about the answers in a few minutes, okay? Cool. So that was probably not adequate enough time at all to address these two massive questions that I gave you. Okay, so this is a really black and white question, okay? How many people in the room think you can have multiple forms of theology? Raise your hand. You can have multiple forms of theology. How many people in the room think you cannot have multiple forms of theology? Now, does somebody want to represent the first group and tell me why you think you can have multiple forms of theology? Okay, I want to see what the other side has to say. So I would have to tend to agree with Jake, actually. And he did what I emphasize. He stuck with the definition. So he said that theology is defined as the study of God. And he said that there's only one God. But I think you guys were looking at an interesting aspect of it, right? So perhaps, and you could tell me what you think, perhaps you were emphasizing more the idea of study, right? So there are multiple groups of people who are all grappling for God, right? And in fact, St. Paul talks about this. He talks about like groping for God, trying to find him in the dark, right? So there are multiple different groups of people who are trying to find God and are trying to theologize about God. However, I think we have to recognize that every religion does not just paint themselves as a group of people trying to figure out about God. Every religion is, in fact, making statements about God, right? They're saying God is like this. God is like this. God is like this, God is like this. And all these statements don't agree. For instance, do you all believe that Jesus is God? Well, then you are in pretty much direct opposition to the main Judaic belief that A, there's only one God, because they can't understand our notion of the Trinity. But if they were to entertain a Trinitarian theology, they would say there's only one person in God, okay? So if you're, say, you're Christian, you're already putting yourself in opposition to Jewish theology, because different forms of theology and different religions, I would say, are not just, like I said, groups of people kind of coming together to try to find God. They are inevitably making statements about God. And anytime you make a statement about God, you're going to negate something else. So if you say God is good, you're saying God is not evil, right? Okay? And so because there is only one God, there can, properly speaking, only be one theology. Okay? So, for instance, I'll just let you on a little pet peeve that I have. I really don't like that in our high schools we call it religion class. Because we're saying as Catholics, if you're going to a Catholic high school, we're saying as Catholics, we're asserting, we are making the bold assertion that our statements about God are true, which implies that other people's religions are false. That's a big statement. It's hard for people to take that. But if we are subscribing to that statement, and we're saying as Catholics, the theology that we profess is true, and that excludes other forms of religion, then I don't think we need to call our classes religion classes. We just need to say they're theology classes. We're studying God. Okay? Question number two. Let's skip straight to the question, obviously. How would you respond to someone who says they do not believe in God? That's really broad, so I'm going to jump to the smaller question and just ask you guys, because this is a more black and white question. Does Jesus adequately prove his divinity by his words and actions recorded in the New Testament? Now, this was the question for the Jews of Jesus' day, right? Jesus is making this claim that he's God, and the Jews are saying, okay, prove it to me. And some of them were satisfied with what he did and said as proof that he was God, and some were not satisfied, and some were scandalized, and because of that, they killed him, right? So the question for us, and I assume because we're all in this room, we probably all subscribe to Christian beliefs. We probably all say that, yes, I'm satisfied with Jesus' actions and words proving his divinity in the New Testament. But, I mean, put yourself in the shoes of a Jew at that time, or the sandals. And what would you say? Are you satisfied with Jesus' words and actions as proving his divinity in the Old Testament? I mean, the New Testament? Thoughts? So you just brought up the classical understanding. Like when this question has been posed to philosophers and theologians, they say, well, either you have to believe Jesus' claims or you have to say that Jesus is a liar, right? Is there any other points that someone wanted to bring up? Anyone else wanted to bring up some points before I address? Yes. I would say that that's true to a limited extent, and I hope that by engaging your statements, you don't feel like I'm attacking them, because this is how theologians come to some conclusions. So I would say that's true, absolutely, to a certain extent, but I would pose to you the situation of Lucifer, right? So Lucifer, which is the name of Satan before he fell, he was the most intelligent, he is the most intelligent creature that God ever created. And so he understands more about God than any other creature does. And he was faced with God, face to face with God, and he still fell, right? So it's interesting to consider. But it's an interesting point. I don't know if you all heard it. She was saying that if God revealed himself anymore, it would be possible that he was taking away our free will to believe in him. Okay, yes. I think that's an interesting point you bring up at the end. So she says, if you're putting yourself in the sandals of a first century Jew, that A, you would have to know a lot about the scriptures to understand how Jesus is fulfilling the promises of the coming Messiah, which I would reckon to say that Jews in his day were actually pretty well catechized, if we want to use that term for them, okay? And your second point, I just lost it. Remind me of your second point. The miracles. So she said that people seen them in person. I mean, if you didn't see them in person, it'd be a little bit more difficult to believe. And I want to take this as a jumping point for the question that you kind of posed to me. And you said to me, do I want proof that Jesus is the second person of the Trinity, right? That's kind of what you were bringing up. Well, I want to bring in a philosophical distinction for you to help you understand this problem. So you can prove something, but to prove something, you do it in a logical manner. So for instance, A, B equals C. So like the classic example that's given in a philosophy class of logic, now I'm blanking on it. It's like Socrates is a man, a man is happy, Socrates is happy, something like that. You know what I mean? It's called a syllogism. That is proving something. But what if there's something that you can't prove? Like, for instance, I walk up to you and I say, I want you to prove to me that you're here right now. How do you prove A to B to conclusion that I'm here right now? So philosophers say that you can prove something, but you can also demonstrate something. So for instance, if I have something in my hand and I say, or you say to me, show me what's in your hand, and I say, I don't have anything in my hand, and you say, prove it to me, what am I immediately going to do to you? I'm not going to go, oh, well, Socrates is a man, and I'm not going to give you a syllogism. What am I going to do? I'm going to go like that, right? So it is not possible to prove that Jesus is the second person of the Trinity. But it is possible for Jesus to demonstrate that he is the second person of the Trinity. How does he do this in the New Testament? He does this most prominently in his miracles. All right? So in his miracles, Jesus takes the laws of nature and he moves them in a way that only the creator of those laws can manipulate them. So by manipulating the laws of nature in a way that is not destructive, okay? Sometimes we think about manipulating the laws of nature, and we think like Transformers, you know, like manipulating the laws of nature. I mean, like water into wine. He's manipulating the laws of nature. He is demonstrating to us that he is the creator and that all things come from him, and therefore he is God. So at the end of the day, his miracles are deeply important. And that's why St. Paul talks about this a lot. That's why the resurrection is so important, because the resurrection is his final miracle that he shows to us. He manipulates laws of nature outside of himself, and then in the culmination of all of it, he allows himself to be put to death, and then he raises himself from the dead. Like, we've grown used to this because we hear about it all the time. Someone rising from the dead. Oh, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, Jesus did that. He rose from the dead. Okay, no, there is, I can't think of a better miracle. I can't think of a better miracle. That was the culmination of it, okay? That's why St. Paul emphasizes over and over. If Jesus didn't rise, our faith would be for nothing. Because it is the preeminent way that he demonstrates that he is God. But you also made the point that at the end of the day, you think it's a matter of faith. And that's true. It is a matter of faith. It's a leap of faith to an extent. Because we like to be proven stuff, right? We live in a society that's all about science. And you're like, well, I think God exists. And people are like, well, prove it to me. Boom. Some things can't be proved. They can only be demonstrated. Okay. I think we're going to wrap it up with there, right there. And I've been spinning on this microphone a lot. Sorry. But Carrie's going to give you some announcements. I want to thank you very much for your attention. I know, like, this is like a car accident behind me. You know what I mean? Like, you drive by a car accident, and you're like, don't look. I can't stop looking. So I appreciate your attention amidst the car accident behind me. And I just want to, I have to say one last thing. So my favorite thing about giving talks that I get to do is I get to ask an entire room of people to pray for me. And so, like Carrie said, I'm 11 days away from graduating. I am, like, totally swamped. I can't even see the light at the end of the tunnel. And not to get, like, super gushy personal on you guys, but I just found out before I came here that one of my grades is, like, on the border. And if I pass this class, I get my master's. And if I don't pass this class, I don't get my master's. So I want to ask you guys to pray for me over the next week and a half. And I'm gonna, you know, when you take like a lifeguarding class or a CPR class, they tell you that if you're in charge of like an emergency situation, you have to tell somebody what to do. So you point at someone and say, you, call 911. So I'm not just going to ask you guys to pray for me. I'm going to say that if you find yourself at Mass, to offer your Holy Communion for my studies. And if you're on a workout regimen, to offer your workout for my studies. And when you fast on Friday, it no longer has to be from meat, but you're all supposed to be fasting all Fridays. When you fast on Friday for something, you can fast for me. Okay? Thank you all very, very much for your attention. I had a really lovely evening tonight. Have a good night.